You can turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 7. We'll be there in just a moment. I don't think John knows that pretty much every time he leads a song, it's one that nobody knows, but he'll figure that out after he's been here a couple more years, I think. No, actually, that's one of the reasons I like when John leads singing, and he always sends me his list, and I think, oh, at least two of those you're going to be singing on your own. So I want to take just a moment to welcome you if you're visiting, say that we're glad you're with us. You know, there are always different kinds of sermons that are preached. There are different ways that people present lessons. Tonight, really, what I want to do with you is just kind of have a Bible study. And we're just going to look at some scriptures that I think are just really neat and fascinating. One particular scene in Jesus' life. And ask some questions about why did this happen? Why did he do what we're about to look at here in this text? Contextually, for this church, the reason we're going to look at this is we just had a Bible study Friday night around the city in different homes. And in that Bible study, we looked at Mark chapter 7, verses 1 through 23. And we learned some things that Jesus taught about the heart of man. And the lessons that were learned from that were based on an interaction Jesus had with the Pharisees, the leaders, some of the leaders of the Jews, who had traveled all the way up from Jerusalem to Galilee to hear him and to be around him and really just to challenge him. And the lessons that he taught in Mark 7, 1 through 23 are very important, valuable lessons. But I want to show you a section right after that where Jesus did something very strange in his ministry. If you look at Mark 7, I'd like you to notice verse 24. Verse 24 says that Jesus got up and went away from there to the region of Tyre. And when he had entered a house, he wanted no one to know of it, yet he could not escape notice. Now notice there in verse 24 it says, Jesus got up and went away from there to the region of Tyre. Well, where's there? The there here is Galilee. He wasn't in Jerusalem interacting with Pharisees and scribes. He was up in his hometown area up north, and they had come to him. He had been so popular and so successful in his ministry that he'd drawn the attention of the people in the south that had come all the way up north to trouble him and to give him trouble. And now we find Jesus withdrawing, it says, from that area, turning away and going into Tyre. We're going to look at this in a moment in Matthew. Matthew 15 is the parallel account to this. We're going to look at both places. Jesus went up further north into Tyre and Sidon. Well, that's not Jewish country. Those are Gentiles up there. And it's interesting that even up there where Jesus goes away, he can't escape notice. People know that he's there. That just says something about how popular he was. What I want you to get to think about with me in this study is what happens when Jesus goes up into Tyre and Sidon, and why did he go there? What was the point of this time in his life? How many of you have heard, and this by show of hands, how many of you have heard somebody talk about the Galilean ministry of Jesus? How many of you have heard of that? How many have heard of somebody speak of the Perean ministry of Jesus? Less of you. Luke talks a lot about that ministry of Perea, which was sort of between Galilee and Jerusalem on the other side of the river. But there's some times where you organize Jesus' life by the Perean ministry. How many of you have heard of Jesus' Judean ministry or when he was in Jerusalem? Now, here's the question I want to ask. How many of you have heard of the retirement period of Jesus' life, by show of hands? Anybody? Couple of people. It's an old term that not very many people use anymore when they describe the ministry of Jesus. That he had a Galilean ministry, a Perean ministry, a Judean ministry, but he had this thing that some old Bible teachers call the retirement period. This is it right here. It starts in Mark 7:24, and it goes through about chapter 8, verse 10. That's the retirement period. Now, they use that old word retirement because Jesus kind of, I guess, just stopped in some ways doing his work among the Jews and he retired or withdrew into a section of the country or that part of the world where really he wouldn't have interacted with Jewish people very much at all. It's a very strange time in his life, and we don't know a lot about it, just a couple of stories in this retirement period when he went up to Tyre and Sidon. But I'm going to ask you to consider, why did he do this? Why did Jesus leave the house of Israel, the sheep of Israel behind, and go up into this far northern country of Tyre and Sidon? There's a few things I want to show you before we get to the details of this, kind of on either side of this. Look at chapter 7, verse 1 of Mark. Notice 7:1. It says, "The Pharisees and some of the scribes gathered around him when they had come from Jerusalem." You see that verse there? These teachers from Israel or from further south had come and gathered around Jesus, and they began to challenge him. Now, go to chapter 8 in your Bible and look at verse 11. Immediately after the retirement period, 8:11 says, "The Pharisees came out and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him." Now here's what you have on either side of this trip. You have the leaders of the Jews causing trouble for Jesus, challenging him, and then as soon as he gets back, they're challenging him again. So it kind of makes sense that he would step away from that for a little while. But still the question is, why did he step away? Why not just face that? And I believe there's some lessons to learn. Let me show you a couple of more things here. Let's actually go to the Matthew account of this, Matthew chapter 15. And I'll make reference back and forth, but most of what we'll do is here in Matthew chapter 15. Notice verse 1 of Matthew 15. "Then some Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, 'Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders, for they do not wash their hands when they eat bread?'" This is the section that's the same as Mark 7. Now look at chapter 16, one chapter on, 16:1. "The Pharisees and Sadducees came up, and testing Jesus, they asked him to show them a sign from heaven." So again, here's the bookends of this retirement. He's challenged, and he goes away for a bit, and he comes back, and he's challenged again by the leaders of the Jews. All right. So what lessons are we to learn from Jesus going to Tyre and Sidon? All right, now if you're here in Matthew chapter 15, it says here in verse 21, look at verse 21, that Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from that region came out and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." We'll talk about this Canaanite woman in a minute. But notice that Jesus is in this place called Tyre and Sidon. Has Jesus ever talked about Tyre and Sidon before? Go back to chapter 11 in Matthew. And notice with me verse 20 of Matthew 11. "Then he began to denounce the cities in which most of his miracles were done because they did not repent. Woe to you, Chorazin. Woe to you, Bethsaida. For if the miracles had occurred in Tyre and Sidon, which had occurred in you, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. Nevertheless, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, will not be exalted to heaven, will you? You will descend to Hades. For if the miracles had occurred in Sodom, which had occurred in you, it would have remained to this day. Nevertheless, I say to you that it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the days of judgment than for you." Now, notice what Jesus said. He's with his countrymen and the cities that he's gone around doing miracles, and he's frustrated that they wouldn't change their ways. So he says, "If I'd been doing this in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented." Now, the Jews who knew their Bible, knew their Old Testament, they would remember that Tyre and Sidon was a very wicked place. There was idolatry and all kinds of things that had gone on in the past, in the old times, and God had judged that region and those nations severely. He had destroyed them. Same with Sodom and Gomorrah. But you have Jesus saying, if those people had seen what you Jews see, they would have changed. And then right after he says that, in chapter 15, he goes there. And I want you to keep that in mind. He goes to Tyre and Sidon. And he's going to spend some time there. We're going to see what he finds there, which I think is interesting. All right, let me show you something else that's going on in this section. Go back to Matthew 14. And I want you to notice something Jesus did right before he goes to Tyre and Sidon. Matthew chapter 14, notice verse 13. Now when Jesus heard about John, that's John the Baptist, and that was him being beheaded, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself. And when the people heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities. And when he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them and healed their sick. By the way, you notice there that Jesus withdrew to a secluded place. Just like in Matthew 15, he withdraws to what should be a secluded place up in Tyre. Matthew will mention this a number of times in his book. Jesus will go through something or hear about something, usually having to do with the Jews who are in opposition to him, and he will withdraw. And when he withdraws, it always turns out that he finds people who come and find him. Like right here in Matthew 14. What does he do next in Matthew 14? It says in verse 14, when he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them and healed their sick. And when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, this place is desolate, the hour is already late, so send the crowds away that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves. But Jesus said to them, they do not need to go away, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, we have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. But he said, bring them here to me. Ordering the people to sit down on the grass, he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food, and breaking the loaves, he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And they all ate and were satisfied, and they picked up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 full baskets. And there were about 5,000 men who ate, besides women and children. All right. So Jesus feeds the 5,000. And everybody knows this story. And I want you to keep in mind that what the Bible says is that when he fed them, it's specifically said there in verse 20, they all ate and were satisfied. You see that language? Keep that in mind. And then they filled up 12 baskets with crumbs. And I want you to keep that in mind. Now notice what happens in Tyre and Sidon in the retreat period or the retirement period. Go to chapter 15 in Matthew and look at verse 29. Departing from there, Jesus went along the Sea of Galilee, and having gone up on the mountain, he was sitting there, and large crowds came to him, bringing with them those who were lame, crippled, blind, mute, and many others. And they laid them down at his feet and he healed them. So the crowd marveled as they saw the mute speaking, the crippled restored, and the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel. And Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I feel compassion for the people because they've remained with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat, and I do not want to send them away hungry, for they might faint on the way. And the disciples said to him, where would we get so many loaves in this desolate place to satisfy such a large crowd? And Jesus said to them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7 and a few small fish. And he directed the people to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves from the fish, and giving thanks, he broke them and started giving them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they picked up what was left over of the broken pieces, 7 large baskets full. And those who ate were 4,000 men besides women and children. And sending the crowds away, Jesus got into a boat and came to the region of Magadan. All right. Now watch what happens. He feeds 5,000. The Jewish people come and challenge him. The leaders challenge him. Then he withdraws into the Gentile regions. He ends up in Decapolis, which is on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, still Gentile region. and he feeds 4,000. So he does something very similar in both places. Feeds 5,000, feeds 4,000. Why did this happen, and what was the lesson to be learned from this? We'll finish that in a little while. I will tell you this. It has something to do with the baskets that they picked up. And there was a lesson that he wanted the disciples to learn about the baskets that they picked up. But let's look a little closer at this Syrophoenician woman. Go back to chapter 15. Let's read about Jesus interacting with this woman in Tyre. Verse 21. Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from the region came out and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away, because she keeps shouting at us." But he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. All right. I'm sure you've read this story before, and you've probably studied it and thought about it and talked about it in classes. But I have to tell you, this is one of the strangest stories to me in the Bible. That Jesus goes up to this area of Tyre and Sidon. He goes into a house, and Mark tells us he didn't want anybody to see him. He was trying to keep himself hid. But he couldn't do it because people had heard about him. And there's this woman that I don't know her name, who seeks out the house where Jesus is and begins to yell things outside the house. Now, the Bible says she was a Canaanite, and in Mark's account, it says she was a Greek, which probably means she was Canaanite descent and Greek religiously, like Greek culturally. She would have been an idolater, and there might have been a couple of options for the gods that she served. But I want you to think about this woman for a minute and what her life story was. She says that she has a daughter who is cruelly demon-possessed. Imagine being a mom and having a little girl at home who's maybe curled up on a bed, you know, shaking, can't talk, whatever demon possession looked like. And this lady has probably asked help from her gods, from her idols, from all the places she could think to help, ask help from, and she can't find help. But she's heard about this Jewish rabbi, this one in the southern regions that has been doing amazing things. So she shows up at this house and she starts screaming something. Listen to what she says. She said, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David." What does that mean, Son of David? That's Jewish talk. That's a Gentile saying what many of the Jews weren't saying yet. "Hey, you're the Messiah. You're the Son of David. I know who you are. Come out and help me." What does the Bible say Jesus did? The next verse. It says that Jesus remained silent. Verse 23, he didn't answer her a word. He let the woman just keep screaming. Now, I have to tell you, there are a lot of things about Jesus that I don't understand. And there are ways that he interacted with people that I don't always understand. But this is one that would be really hard for me. A woman crying and screaming, having a troubled child. Obviously, anybody's going to have compassion on somebody like this. And he had to perk up when his ears heard her saying, "Son of David, Lord, help me." But he doesn't say a word. He just stays silent. Now, it's so troublesome that the disciples speak up. Look what they say. They say to Jesus, verse 23, his disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away because she keeps shouting at us." Notice Jesus has lots of people imploring him. You got a woman outside saying, "Help me, help me." Now you got disciples coming to Jesus saying, "Jesus, come on, do something about this." By the way, the implication of them saying, "Send her away," is not, "Don't help her, tell her to leave." That's not what they're saying. What they're saying is, "Would you just give her what she wants so she'll go away?" That's what they're actually saying. They're not being discompassionate here. The implication of their request is, "You do what she's asking so she'll stop asking and just go away." Now, notice what Jesus says next, because this sounds harsh. Verse 24, Jesus said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Or in other words, my answer is no, I'm not going to help her. Now, my question is this. Jesus, if you were sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, what are you doing up here? Like, why are you up here? Then go back down there and look for the lost sheep in the house of Israel. What are you doing in Gentile country? So, now watch what the lady does next. Verse 25, it says, she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." Some people think that this means Jesus came out of the house, that the woman wouldn't have had the audacity to come in the house, and there probably would have been no way for her to get in the house. But that her constant yelling might have drawn Jesus out of the house, even though he hadn't said anything. And she came up and bowed down before him and said, "Lord, help me." This woman is tenacious. She's interesting. Look what Jesus says next. He answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." You know, one of the things that Jews would often say about Gentiles, and especially Canaanites, was that they would refer to them as dogs. These people up there, they're just dogs. Now, sometimes in the Bible, the word dog means just like you would think it would mean. It's like a bad thing to call somebody. Like a mutt or a ravenous dog that would cause trouble. In fact, Jesus had used this term, not this one, but that term for that kind of dog earlier in the book of Matthew in the Sermon on the Mount. Do not give what is holy to the dogs. Don't throw your pearls before swine. Now you have Jesus saying to a Canaanite woman, it's not good to take the children's bread and give it to the dogs. But this is a different word for dogs. This is a word that means something like, in the English, puppies. The two Greek words were either a big dog that would run the streets or a little dog that you'd keep in your house. In fact, the children would have them under the table. And they were just like dogs we'd have in our homes. I don't think Jesus is being rude here. I think he's using an illustration and probably even saying it with some sort of compassion here. Now, the woman responds to him in an interesting way. Look at how she responds. She said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs, the puppies, feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus said, "Oh, woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish." And at once her daughter was healed. Now, what was it about this interaction that made Jesus realize how great this woman's faith was? I think there's a bunch of lessons here. Number one, she knew who he was. And she knew who he was not because she'd ever met him or seen him. She'd only heard reports about him. She had been able to piece together enough of what she had heard about what was going on in the south to know that it was the Son of David, to know that he was the Lord, to show up at the place that he was and say, "Help me." And when he was quiet, she just kept saying, "Help me." And when he tried to push back a little bit and say, "Look, I'm not here to help all of the Gentiles of the world right now." In fact, to make sure that you understand what Jesus said, Mark helps with this. Mark said in his account, Jesus said something like, "Let the children be fed first before the dogs." That's how Jesus said it in that account. He wasn't saying the dogs will never get fed. He was saying there's an order to things. And so now he says, look, it's not good for me to spend my time doing this with you. I came to deal with the Israelites. And this woman, in her desperation, humbles herself by saying, hey, I know who I am. I understand. Did you catch that she says in that verse, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dog, verse 27. Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table. You notice that master's has an apostrophe, like plural. She, I think, is saying something like this. I know that the Jews are your people. I know, in fact, that they're, in some ways, the masters here. They are the children, but they're the masters of us. They've always had the promised land. They're the ones who defeated us. We know that I'm not one of the covenant folks like they are. But in your illustration, Jesus, of dogs eating the children's crumbs, I'm perfectly willing to eat crumbs. I'll take them. Jesus is so impressed with this that he heals the daughter and he says, your faith has saved you. Now, why? Why do we have this story? Did Jesus ever see faith like this in Israel? Think about the contrast. I mean, where he was in Israel, they weren't imploring him to help. They were imploring him for all kinds of other things. They were challenging him on every other front. But here in this Gentile region, these people just throw themselves at him. In fact, the feeding of the 4,000 in Decapolis, it says that people are bringing folks to him and just dropping them at his feet. He's sitting on the mountainside and they're just bringing people to him and he's just healing. All right. I think there's a whole bunch of lessons here for us having to do with what faith looks like, how we don't give up in asking God's blessings. But I want you to imagine being one of the disciples, one of the apostles that saw all this. What were they supposed to learn from this? Let's go now to Matthew chapter 16. I want you to see something that Jesus says to these guys. After the Pharisees, in the first couple verses here, challenge Jesus again, they get in a boat and they're traveling, and in verse 5, the disciples came to the other side of the sea, but they had forgotten to bring any bread. And Jesus said to them, watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And they began to discuss among themselves, saying, he said this because we did not bring any bread. But Jesus, aware of this, said, you men of little faith, why do you discuss among yourselves that you have no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000? And how many baskets full you picked up? Or the 7 loaves of the 4,000? And how many large basketfuls you picked up? How is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees? Then they understood that he did not say to beware of the leaven of bread, but of teaching, of the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. All right. When all this is done, when everything about this retirement period is done and Jesus and his disciples are on a boat, the disciples are talking about that they had forgotten bread amongst themselves. And Jesus says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And they're like, what is he talking about? Why is he talking about bread? Does he know we forgot bread? Oh, is he mad at us because we didn't bring what we needed to? And Jesus stops them and says, how do you not understand any of this? Now notice what he says. He says, do you not understand? Look at verse 9. Do you not understand or remember? Remember what? Remember when I fed the 5,000? What does he say that they took up? you took up 12 baskets full. You see that? I want you to notice something about that word baskets. It's unique. It's not the same word as the next verse that says, when the 7 loaves of the 4,000, how many large baskets did you pick up? Some versions don't say baskets and large baskets. Some versions just say baskets. But these are actually two totally distinct words. And it's always the case. If you go back to the feeding of the 5,000, the word baskets means a little basket. Like a lunchbox. Like when your kids go to school in the next few weeks. They will take a little lunchbox, a little basket. When the Jews were fed, the 5,000, the disciples picked up 12 little baskets full. When the 4,000 were fed, they picked up 7, in a totally different word, large baskets full. And these would have been like big, almost like bigger than a picnic basket. In fact, it's the same word in Acts 9:25 when Paul escaped through a wall and they lowered him down from the wall in a basket. You remember that? So imagine a person in a basket. That was how big the baskets were when they picked up the loaves in the Gentile region. Now, what do you make of that? I mean, what do you make of that? You've got the Jews who are in opposition to Jesus. And when the disciples go around and pick things up, they fill like 12 little baskets. But when they go to the Gentiles, they pick up 7 large basketfuls. I think there's actually something going on here. I think part of what was being taught here in these parables and in this teaching and in these miracles is that sometimes the people with the bigger baskets to receive from Jesus weren't going to be the people that thought they had it all together. That these Gentile folks who knew their need and saw that they were in trouble were going to be able to come to him in a way that was far more humble and more receptive. And Jesus says to his disciples, have you guys not learned the lesson yet? Don't listen to your teachers. Don't listen to them. Don't take your teaching from these guys who wash their hands and do all these rituals, but can't see a sign when it's right in front of them, who don't know who I am. But let me ask you, do you think Jesus could have said, learn the lesson from the woman in Tyre? Pay attention to people like that. Learn the lesson from the 4,000 who had never seen him before, didn't know who he was, but in Decapolis he gathered this crowd. I think there's something to that. And I want to leave you with just this thought. Who are the real dogs in this story? Just like there's two words for basket in the Bible, there's two words for dogs. This is the place where you'll see him talk about the little dogs when he's talking to the Gentile woman. But did you know the Bible's going to use the term dogs to talk about the religious leaders of the Jews later? Both in Matthew's account of the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus said, don't give what is holy to the dogs, but look at Philippians 3. Philippians 3. Listen to what Paul says in verse 2. Let's start in verse 1, actually. Finally, my brethren, rejoice in the Lord. To write the same things again is no trouble to me, and it is a safeguard for you. Beware of the dogs. Beware of the evil workers. Beware of the false circumcision. For we who are the true circumcision, who worship in the Spirit of God and glory in Christ Jesus, and put no confidence in the flesh, although I myself might have confidence even in the flesh, if anyone has a mind to put confidence in the flesh, I far more. Stop. Listen to what Paul said. Hey, Christians, watch out for dogs. Beware of dogs. Who was he talking about? He was actually talking about the same people that Jesus was having trouble with, the Pharisees and the scribes and the circumcision, the leaders. Paul used to be one of them. Paul had been a dog who would bite and devour and cause trouble for Christians because he wouldn't listen to the Lord. So actually, here's the lesson. Everybody's a dog. Do you know that? Everybody is. It just sort of depends on what kind of dog you are. Jesus was constantly around what the Bible would describe as dogs. Either the kind of dogs who were humble and recognized who they were and said, "We'll eat whatever you give us." Or the kind of dogs that thought they were something, top dog, and they would like bite and devour and cause trouble and glory in their rituals and in what they thought they had. And there's an important lesson for us in that. I'm wanting to think more about this scene. I think there's a lot more going on in that visit to Tyre and Sidon than we recognize. But I hope some of those thoughts around that help us understand what is the right heart that God is looking for. What is he interested in? And are we like this woman who won't quit and won't give up until we finally understand what he has in store for us? Thanks for your attention tonight. I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me do that Bible study with you. Those were some things on my mind with the study this week. We're going to offer an invitation. And the invitation is simply, if it seems like God has been distant to you in your life, again, think about this woman. Maybe it seems like God's been silent. Maybe it seems like God said, "No, I'm not going to help you." Have you given up on that? Do you think Jesus was probably trying to teach everyone a lesson by patiently waiting until this person finally said, "Look, I'm humble enough to know who I am. And you just please need to help me"? That's when Jesus will finally help someone. If you've never humbled yourself and come to the Lord, think about doing that tonight while we stand and sing together.